Drum roll, please. The moment we've all been waiting for. March CPI. Hot or not? Or what if it comes in line and we just sit here twiddling our thumbs? We'll find that out at 8:30. Delta soaring. Good news report. Has there been a Jack Ma sighting? We'll take a look at Alibaba. How does Triple D hedge on a day like this? We'll help you out on that. It's Wednesday. It's a big day. Blue Putnam joining us 8:35. I'm excited for pre-market prep.
Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, follow through that strong close that we had. We're up 8.5 handles, 52.68.75, butting up some major resistance. You have the buck down 10 cents at 103.92. TLT, I'm making you guys happy. Look at the TLT. Back above 92, up 22 cents. Good day for the bonds yesterday. Crude in the 85 handle, up 53 cents at 85.75. Gold, it's looking green, up 480 at 23.67.20. Silver, well, rally's still going, but stalling in the 28 handle, up 23 cents at 28.22. And Bitcoin, couldn't hold that quad top from yesterday. We're up 30 bucks, 69,385. Bring in Triple D. We can bring in AB at the same time.
What?
Let's do it. Triple D, did you fall asleep at your desk last night?
It was quiet. The first 30 minutes, we had a little bit of action. Like the S&Ps had that rip-roaring rally towards the end of the day. And then we ripped another 10 handles after hours in that first 30 minutes. It's the follow-through from the buy the dip. I guess they couldn't get enough buy the dip and had to take it all the way back up. Basically, Joel, we're right back up to the high from yesterday. So that whole sell-off is gone here now. It's jockeying ahead of this. It's people positioning. It's speculation. It's all about the CPI.
And I know one person that was a little bullish during the that sell-off yesterday and looking for opportunity in the market.
Who's that?
That's true. I did. So I messaged Joel that I was buying some cheap calls because it was like during the sell off, I was like, well, look, like A, we could get a rally throughout the rest of this day, which we did. And then B, we've got the catalyst tomorrow, which if it comes in line or hot, could see the market rally. I bought some cheap Apple calls that expire on Friday because I was just like, this thing's been lagging, could be due for a bounce. Joel was like, you should have gone with SPY. I was looking at the charts and I was like, man, you're right. I should have gone with SPY. I messaged him at 10:52 a.m. Eastern. If you looked at a chart from yesterday, it was like the exact bottom.
Holy. Right now, why did you message me, AB?
Well, I think I did. I think I posted it in the pre-market prep Slack channel. So if you went on Slack.
I gotta read that more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I think if I would have placed that same exact trade on the SPY calls that expire, well, really the ones that expire today, I probably would have made some good coin already. But Apple now trading above 170 pre-market. So if the number does happen to come in cool or whatever, then, you know, could end up making money on it. But yeah, just took a shot. Nothing, you know, nothing too big. It was some cheap contracts. Like $100 worth. So, you know, I'm not expecting.
I told them the SPY is, I mean, Apple was on support. We've talked about that support, but I'm like, you know, give yourself a, you know, Apple's just kind of been out of favor. It really hasn't been participating in the rallies. Now, if you get a good number, or as it turns out, the rebound, it seems like the SPY just has a little bit more of a kick to it. So that's the only reason I said it, you know, was, you know, it's just, you know, you got a little bit more of a chance.
And
up 79 cents.
Yeah. And I did end up buying some, a couple cheap QQQ calls too around the same time. But, you know, those aren't up that much either, but a little bit. But also to your point, Joel, I mean, the other benefit, again, just with this options trade on this binary event today, the benefit of going with SPY or the Q contracts is that you can buy ones that expire today as opposed to Apple. You've got the more premium go until Friday, but it also gives me more time. I mean, I got the 175 calls. So then if Apple's trading at around, you know, 170 this morning, And again, if the number comes in light, which I'm not saying I that's my expectation, then, you know, then I have a couple more days for Apple to get past that 175 spot. And again, I got the contracts for, you know, 10 cents each. So got 10 of them for $100. So, you know, we'll see.
Hey!
We'll see.
Okay. Heck, it's like DraftKings, you know, you're betting, you know, you make little bets here and there. Exactly. Just fun.
So I mean, I did want to just overall, like right now, it seems like, you know, the saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it seems like the strategy that's worked the past, you know, few months has just been buy the dip, right? In 2021, it was buy everything, whether it was dipping or roaring, it was you know, Portnoy throwing darts at a dartboard. You could buy anything. And that was not broken for a while. And it worked until it stopped working. Right now, the buy the dip has just been working. And, you know, last Thursday we had that huge sell-off. Yep. Market bounced right back Friday. Yesterday, again, huge sell-off. Looked like everyone was like, oh my God, CPI is going to come in high. Well, you know, scared. Buy the dip worked again. So, like, when does this – I mean, does this just keep working until it doesn't work anymore?
Yep. That's the way trading is. Welcome to trading. You keep doing it. Working once and working twice, you do it 172 times if you can do it. I mean,
you're right. Thursday was the warning signal. And then Friday, you know, we hung in there off a hotter than expected unemployment. Monday and Tuesday, we had the double close, treaded water, and then Friday and Monday. Then they faked you out with that break yesterday. And what I remember, Dennis, you said, you know, if, you know, I think it was you, Aaron, you said, yeah, if it's a bad number, maybe look through the opportunities, but that opportunity happened to come during the regular session. S&P's inching up towards yesterday's high, but we do have the official start of Q1 earnings season. Why don't we get that out of the way before we go on too many tangents?
Yeah, let's go to the airline world real quick. Delta Airlines reported EPS came in at 45 cents, beat the 36 cent estimate. Sales came in at 13.75 billion, beat the 12.57 billion. Delta reiterates 2024 outlook for EPS of $6 to $7. The estimates were for $6.46. So you got the double beat on EPS and sales, as well as the, you know, decent guidance. And the stock trading up this morning about 4.7% right now, right around $50. I mean, you know, maybe a little psychological level there, but I guess Delta not too, you know, tied up in all this Boeing and other problems that we've seen in the airline space.
All of the airline earnings were good last quarter. They continue to be good. It continues to be the trade, actually, just being long the airlines into the earnings and then selling them on the earnings pop. So I'm not going to go away from that trend. So if you're long it, I would sell it into the earnings pop because it seems like they don't hold. But with that being said, great report, predictable kind of. You're coming into, you know, that high that we were there back in July. So that is one concerning thing, is that 49.81. I don't know how high we were in pre-market, but $50. It's probably some $50 calls. And, you know, that's another thing here too, like we don't consider
optionality. Yeah.
The optionality. When you come in, you know, and you got the 50, it's probably got some pretty high open interest. People think, ooh, I got the 50 calls. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And it's not going to go through there because everybody that gets above there, market maker gets above there, starts shorting the stock against it. That's just really what happens here. The options kind of put a stop on it sometimes. But we got a CPI number. We have a lot of information coming in. So Delta earnings are fun to talk about for the first 21 minutes here. But in 21 minutes, what's going to matter for Delta as well is going to be the CPI. So it's going to be major movement, not only from their report, but from the CPI.
A couple comments. Anne Marie says, traveling continues to be awful. I'll take the other end of that, Trey, because I fly Delta a lot. And they basically get you on the plane on time, and they tell you to sit your butt down and buckle up, and we're leaving. And they do. And, you know, boom, boom, boom. And I usually check the plane. A lot of them have been Airbuses. We have been really very, very lucky. So that's just from a, you know, boots on the ground standpoint. This $50 area has just been a nemesis for this stop. You got up to 49.81 in July of last year. You haven't got there yet. I'm not going to worry about, I can't worry. There's a couple highs over 50, but that's a big psychological number. I'm sure there's a bunch of size there. But man, you get a $50 bid in this, and I'm not just talking about today, but over the next couple days, then you got it, you know, maybe another $2-2.5 here. Historically speaking, it has faded off its earnings. You know, it has these pops, it has the run into it. So stick to see what your pre-market high is. 50 is a huge number. I'll just take a look at UAL. UAL's having a nice sympathy move with this. AAL is having a nice move with this, up 37 cents. And what's interesting is that this, maybe the higher oil, I know Delta does some hedging, but this is an earnings report in the face of rising oil prices, which I find to be very, very interesting. But they love to fly, and it shows. So we'll see what happens.
And this report. Sorry, Joel, not to cut you off. And this report didn't even account for the thousands of dollars that the company brought in from the Eclipse flights that they'd had. They had one that flew.
Did you see that?
Put out a flight from Austin to Austin and Dallas to Detroit.
Yes.
That flew during the Eclipse. And, you know, they sold out the seats in less than 24 hours, and they were charging thousands of dollars for the tickets, and they sold them out like immediately. To your point, Joel, I never really flew Delta a lot before moving to Detroit. And because Detroit's, you know, one of the big Delta hubs, the airport here, the one terminal is all Delta, and it's like 90 gates, like more than a mile long. I got a Delta credit card now, been flying it a lot. It is really, like, to me, the best, I mean, out there. I mean, it is amazing how my biggest story with it is there was one flight I was going somewhere. I had to fly with my golf clubs. So checked my golf clubs. Say my flight was supposed to land at 10 a.m. I was off the plane with my golf clubs, getting my checked bag at 9:50, 10 minutes before the flight was supposed to land. I was like, I don't even know how this is possible. So, you know, again, I'm kind of bullish Delta too, just from my experience. I know that's not, you know, speaking too much about the company's fundamentals or talking about, you know, the revenue or anything, but just from a customer standpoint, they do a good job.
One final thing. The only thing that they've done wrong is they took over Northwest Airlines, right? And now that Northwest was in Detroit, and Northwest for the longest time, its number was 1-800-225-2525. And they got rid of that number.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So now I just have to figure out the new. But I don't know. You just go on your phone, your app, have Lisa do it. I mean, flying's easy. But, okay, let's
go. We just have precedence, though, that pretty much every airline blew it away last quarter, too, and they all just continued to leak after that. So as much as this market has been buy the dip, the airline trade has been sell the rip, and I don't think that changes today.
Okay.
No, Zippity, that was tongue-in-cheek talking about the Eclipse. I don't think that's the $10,000 or whatever they made. Well, actually, do the math on it. 130 seats over $1,000. No, I'm not going to say it. No, that's not actually impactful. I was just, you know, that's been the hottest story of the week besides CPI.
That flight from my driveway. God, there was actually quite a few planes going by.
Real quick, before we move on from flights and travel, it's the last thing. I made a decision the other day. So I'm going out to Vegas in May for a concert with some of my college buddies. I don't know if this is going to end up saving me money or costing me money. But so the concert's going to end like a little after midnight. I have a flight coming back from Vegas at like 5 a.m. Instead of paying for a hotel room that Saturday night, we decided to just pay for the hotel room Friday night because the prices were like super high, and go back to the casino and hang out at the tables for a few hours and then head to the airport.
Oh, boy.
Good idea or bad idea?
Well, it depends how you do it. The tables. Who are you going to see? Who are you going to see?
It's Dead & Co. with John Mayer at the Sphere. I'm gonna go do boots on the ground reporting at the Sphere. I'm gonna go check it out, see how it is. That's a publicly traded company. So
SPHR.
Yep.
Yeah. We got the inside scoop. There's gonna be some sales over there from AB.
Yeah, we'll see how it is. I mean, I'm excited for that. But all right, then going over to, while we're in the plane world, Boeing reported, you know, some more bad numbers yesterday. Boeing's deliveries fell amid production gap. I mean, the stock ended up closing down around 2%, the seventh day in a row of decline. I mean, they said deliveries nosedived in Q1. So, well, I mean, I just look, I mean, as long as Boeing gets me to where I'm going right now, that's about all I care about, because I'm certainly not buying the stock down here. But you had UBS come in, reaffirm their buy rating on Boeing. So some analysts are still willing to get bullish on the stock. But to me, there's just too much bad news surrounding the company to be getting in on it right now.
And that's what we've talked about on this trade. It's very hard to turn this story around because just the headline risk is always seems to be there. The stock is absolutely hated. It's very hard to turn stories around. And then when you have all the headline risk all the time, it's like, would I want to own it through a weekend? I don't know what's going to happen. You know, is there going to be a Boeing wing fall off? You just don't know. And I mean, they've always tried to just kind of pass the, you know, the blame on, you know, on a lot of these cases here too. You know, where we've had, you know, some issues here, and they're like, oh, well, it was, you know, pilot, you know, or it was the cockpit, or it was like something. You know, they don't want to take responsibility for, you know, anything. And I guess that's just the way corporations work. But I mean, stock's breaking down, making a new low. You're trying to be a hero and saying, well, Boeing will turn it around eventually. They got a duopoly going on there, and we know we're going to continue to fly. Maybe true, but people were saying that at 300. People were saying that at 250. People were saying that at 200. Now it's 177. I don't think there's any reason to get on this train here until this thing gets up over 200 and starts to show you that, hey, we've turned it around. You know, we've fixed the problems. We've tightened the bolts. Tell that, dead money to me.
170, this is a big area, though. If you feel like you just have to buy the dip in here, you have three monthly lows that may come into play today. 167. 52 last month's low, then 76.57 and 76.25. So if you're trying to cover a short in this, I think things could thicken up in that area. It's all bad. It just seems like there's bad news like almost every day. So
all the time.
Figure it out, Boeing. Figure it out.
Like if there's any story that's really hard to turn around, it's this story. Like you think about how much Apple's hated, you know, and it continues to go down despite the great tech rally here. This is a whole other level of hate. I mean, this stock was $400 back in $435 back in 2019. So in the last 5 years, in one of the greatest bull markets that we have ever seen, the stock is down 65%. If you're buying stocks that are down 65%, the greatest bull markets we've ever seen, obviously the companies have some problems. We know it's very highlighted. You can bet on turning around. You can make that bet. I don't think it turns around next week. I don't think I have to hurry into that. I just don't see the signs of a turnaround. The stock's making new lows. Why be the hero? Catch the falling knife. Like Brian Shannon says, great follower on Twitter, why buy the stocks when they're in ridiculous downtrends? That's what we're in here.
Yeah, we had someone call it on this show. Dennis, remember that guy, George, Fari's friend? Remember he called, we had him on in 19 when Boeing was over 400.
Said sell it?
Yeah. He called it.
Get George back on. We like people who make.
He was pretty controversial, but I'll see. Jay, should I have that guy back on? We'll ask Jay.
Jay remembers him.
Jay was around.
Spinner's been with us from like day one. Jay Rice been with us since like day one. We love you, Spinner.
All right, we'll see if Spinner says dig him up. I'll dig him up.
Okay. Spinner really controls the show. We know this.
All right. Dennis, yesterday we got a suggestion from a viewer to talk a little bit about how to hedge your portfolio, specifically how you're hedging your portfolio, Dennis, because I know you mentioned it yesterday that you were going into today a little bit hedged into this report. Today seems like a good day to talk about it. We've got about 11 more minutes to kill before these numbers come out. I will give another preview of what we're expecting, but why don't we get into it? There's a lot of different ways to hedge, including taking Purdue spread when you have UConn, but that's a little bit of a different type of hedging. So let's go. Let's talk about stock portfolios and how you hedge, Dennis.
Okay, I'll leave it. So number one, first, I never hedge my long-term portfolio. Very rarely. The only last time I hedged my long-term investment portfolio was during COVID, and it was before COVID because we could see it coming. It was like the slowest train wreck ever. The disease slowly coming across. And obviously, you know, I say I never buy puts, and I bought puts, you know, to cover the majority of my stock portfolio. And, you know, obviously, I even played some short bets, had some options. That's a different story. You know, that's like long-term, and very rarely do I hedge my long-term portfolio. So I'm not hedging in my long-term portfolio. I just own good companies, reasonable valuations, and usually ride out unless I see some, you know, disease coming that's going to spread around the world, which is very rare to see that. So trading portfolio, I continuously hedge it. So completely different accounts. I have my long-term portfolio at BMO because I'm Canadian. BMO Investor Line. It's like retail, just holds my long-term stocks. I have my short-term trading portfolio at Interactive Brokers. And this is the one I'm actively trading all the time. You know, making trades, going in and out. For an event like this, you know, and sometimes you make a call and you're like, I think it's going to be hot. So I might lean a little bit short here today. But, you know, let's just say I don't know where it's going to be. We don't know where it's going to be. And we just want to, like, hedge away our risk. So there's multiple vehicles you can use. Obviously, the best thing you can use. And again, you have difficulties if you're at, like, a Robinhood because they don't let you short stocks. And then you got to go and get, like, the QQQ inverse or, you know, one of the other inverse. But if you're at a normal brokerage, you know, I just short SPY or I short Qs or I short IWM, depending on what it is. Sometimes I have oil stocks on. I'll short XLE against it.
Also, you will minimize the
risk of like the print going crazy.
You'll go stocked and get stocked too.
Oh yeah. Like if I'm looking at my portfolio right now, you know, like I had XOM Chevron's pair going on. So, you know, and they're similar. They're going to move together here. So, you know, and why are you putting those trades on? Well, maybe I had it on before and then I don't want to go through this number here. So maybe I'm going to look at it and say, okay, well, you know, SPY typically has a lower beta than a lot of stocks. Like, I mean, if you're just looking and say, oh, I'm going to hedge NVIDIA with SPY. I mean, that's not going to work. And hedge NVIDIA with QQQ. I mean, that's not going to work. I mean, you've got to almost have a little bit of NVIDIA and you've got a little bit of other stuff. And then you're going to short more QQQ because NVIDIA is going to move three times as much as QQQ. So you've got to know kind of the betas of your stocks as well. You know, and you don't have to do a perfect science. You know, it's just like, you know, you ballpark it. You can see, oh, I got a lot of risk on. So I'm going to short a little bit extra because if you got $1 million worth of stocks on, but they're all like staples, well, you don't short $1 million worth of SPY against it because you're going to be overhedged. But if you got $1 million worth of tech stocks on, you're going to have to short more than $1 million worth of SPY because you're going to be underhedged. So you got to understand what types of stocks you have on, what the betas of these stocks are, and if they move with or without the market. Like an Apple right now, we've been talking about that. Apple has been moving opposite some of these stocks right now. So Apple and Microsoft can actually be poor hedges. You know, you can come in here and, you know, QQQ, you'd be like, oh, I got a huge position in Apple, I'm going to short Qs. And then, you know, we get a ripper number and the Qs Apple rip higher on you and you're caught. But Apple's been moving opposite. And Apple goes down, you lose on both sides. So you kind of have to understand how your stocks move too. Apple overall, over the last 24 years, moves very well with the Qs. In the last 24 days or 24 in 2024, it doesn't move with the Qs hardly at all. So it's doing its own thing. So you kind of have to understand the personalities of the stocks that you have as well to hedge perfectly. But, you know, just other things being equal, if you've got a lot of stock on, you short a little bit of SPY against it in this event, and then it takes out some of that risk. If you're all in and saying, hey, I think the number's going to be hot, I'm short in stocks, I'm just making a bet, then, you know, a directional bet, then that's a different story. You know, sometimes I make directional bets. A lot of times I'm just trying to extract, you know, pricing, you know, extract money from pricing inefficiencies. So that's where I'm hedging more.
What's the heaviest beta now? NVIDIA or?
SMCI. Like, I mean, if you're talking those ones, it's going to really move.
What about AMD? What about it?
Huge beta. Huge beta. Like AMD is more wild than NVIDIA right now.
If you're talking AMD
versus NVIDIA, you almost got to do like 2-to-1 NVIDIA. And it seems counterintuitive because you got a $700 or an $800 stock versus a $170 stock. But AMD is just moving more. AMD, you know, had that 18-point sell-off the other day. I mean, it's moving more. Now, and again, you got to, you know, there was a semiconductor that reported last night, you know, smaller ones. So some of the chips were down a little bit there. But again, just overall speaking, good hedging vehicles. The main hedging vehicles that I use every single day are Qs, SPY, IWM. If I got a lot of small caps, it might be IWM. And they're liquid. Why do I use those? I get in and out. I can get it out of my hedge for like 2-3 cents. You know, you can move, you know, big money in and out. You know, it's not like I got 100 shares of Qs, you know, like or whatever, you know, typically, you know, like I may at any given time. But, you know, a lot of times I've got some pretty decent size on these things. If I'm hedging with some, you know, exotic, like, you know, if you, some people say, well, why don't you use the RSP? Well, look at your market in the RSP right now.
It moves.
But look right now in the pre-market. You're going to get out of that thing pre-market? No, you can't get out of it pre-market. It's 166 to 169. There's no liquidity there. So it's not like I can put on a hedge right now 5 minutes before using the RSP. I get murdered on the spread. middle of the day maybe, but that's why I stick with the big vehicles, the SPY, the Qs, the IWM, because at any given time, I could wake up at midnight. I probably got a 3-4 cent market in these things, and I can get in and out easily. That's what you want from hedging. You want to be able to get, you know, be able to move, you know, money in and move
it out quickly. Yeah. Dennis, this is from Eric M. I just want to follow up on this. I think this is really important. Dennis, you said yesterday you make money being reactive, but in your overnight account, don't you need to be somewhat predictive with what stocks and sectors will be up and down the next morning?
Somewhat, but again, it's not all about prediction business. Sometimes it's just like somebody, you know, and again, I trade pre-market, open. Sometimes stocks are just opening too low. So maybe I'm going to buy a few of these stocks that are opening too low and hedge it with SPY and hope that it comes back in. They don't always come back. And maybe I miss some news, you know, and that's why news is so important, you know. But if you have no news on a stock, it's opening down too much just because you got some institution that says, I don't want the stock anymore. Well, I want to be on the other side of that because that's not pricing in new information. It's just pricing in their opinion. I will fade opinions. I don't want to fade news, if that makes any sense. And sometimes you fade news. But I mean, an opinion is, you know, one thing. But if somebody's obviously, you know, if there's new news, then it's a different story. So I don't know if I answered that question whatsoever.
No, I think you did. It's just that a lot of the, I think to sum it up, overnight, you are reacting because if there's like someone, if there's a big
all
seller,
the time.
Yep, comes into a stock, a big seller. I mean, I can remember you used to tell me some stories over the years where, you know, someone was just dumping a stock after hours every single day. And you would be like, oh, man. You know, I'll take it, and then the next day it opens it, and then you'll get out on the. I mean, those are rare things. I think that's
The Halliburton money fairy.
That was it. Yeah, that's what
the Halliburton for like a month straight. Some institution just came in after hours and was buying Halliburton up 1-2% after hours every single day, and then it would open the next day up only 0.5%, and I'd make that. You know, I'd extract a little bit, and I'd short it to him again, It's a pattern, and you know, it's the same person. There's not a million people buying something up 1-2% every day. They just decided that was the easiest way for them to get in. I don't think it was because they probably could have got in during, because I was making money off of it, just arbing it. But, you know, there's just opportunities like that. Sometimes somebody's just got an opinion. They're coming in. They're buying stock after hours. Well, I'll short it to them. Sometimes they're selling stock after hours. Well, I'll buy it from them. Now, again, sometimes, you know, then the news comes out the next day and you're like, oh, I just got screwed by some insider. And that does happen. That is the risk. I mean, if you think you get screwed by insiders intraday, you majorly get screwed by insiders after hours because they're coming in. There's definitely after hours moves. And usually it's me getting screwed because I'm like, there's no news out there. And then the news comes out the next morning and you're like, man, that person knew, but whatever, you know, you eat your last and you move on.
The most common thing with that, and I've seen it, is like sometimes on upgrades and downgrades and stuff before that. But listen, it's 8:28.
Yep, that's
okay.
The
we got
talk.
Blue in the
going
background.
Going wide.
Okay, we're gonna keep. Yep. All right. So what I'm gonna do in this rare moment where I put up a 1 minute chart, I usually don't do that. It just makes me too nervous. Once again, I am not gonna jump the gun on this. I'm just gonna try and report the price action to you as it comes across the tape. We do got some major resistance though. We got some major resistance. Go ahead, give us a preview, AB.
Yeah, okay, so core CPI for March, we're looking for 0.3%. The CPI for March, we're also looking for 0.3%. This would be down from 0.4% the month prior. CPI year over year is expected to come in at 3.4% against 3.2% the month prior. So the CPI year over year is actually expected to go up 0.2%. Core CPI year over year is expected to come down from 3.8 to 3.7. So kind of a mixed bag there. But again, 0.3, that's the big number we're looking for March. We're less than a minute away now, so we're going to get those numbers as soon as they come across my desk. My hunches will see the
See the market move first, baby. That's just the way it is.
I think so. I think we'll be able to make some inferences by what we see this 1 minute chart do here. And
the
let's
bulls got to get this through 74.5. 73.5 is the pre-market high. That's a big level. That's almost a triple top, quad top.
It looks like it was cool.
We got the pop. Now the headline.
It's not even 8:30 yet. Hold on.
It's algo jumpers. You can't trust the algo jumpers. Oh, it's hot. Oh, holy mackerel. It's hot. The algo jumpers took it up to 85. They're getting absolutely smoked right now.
Yep, came that in moved. at 0.4%, so the same as February. 0.4 versus 0.3. Year over year came in at 3.5 versus 3.4 estimate, 3.2 prior. So the CPI year over year came in 0.3% higher than it did the month before. USA CPI month over month came in at 0.4% versus 0.3%, 3.8 for core CPI year over year versus 3.7. So it came in hot, but only by 0.1%, 0.1% across the board. Nothing super hot right now. Let's see if that, like we talked about earlier, that buy the dip has been working. Let's see if it ends up working again today. But so, you know, it's not. Everything came in hotter than expected by 0.1%. Nothing super hot in terms of, you know, what we've seen in the past couple of years where sometimes it's been like
the price action here is, you know, the algo jumpers. Before the number was out, they took it through the triple top. They hit all those buy stops, right? Took it up to 88 before 85. Okay. Before people had to react. And then it comes in. And they absolutely slam it. Oh, man. Holy mackerel. Yesterday's low is what we got to keep an eye on right now. And that is
5208.50. See how, Yeah, my Apple calls probably aren't going to do well now. Speaking of hedging, I mean, that's what I should have done. I was up more than 70% on those QQQ calls, but they expired today. I couldn't get out of them. Now the Qs are down 1.2%.
Yeah, you're pretty much. Yeah, I didn't want to say anything yesterday. You know.
No. I was doing it for fun. I mean, I would never buy those types of options contracts with money that I like wasn't okay with losing literally all of it. So, that's probably what's going to happen, unless again, you know, for whatever reason, the people do come in and buy the dip. But if at this point with the Qs down 1.25% now. Down about closer to 1.3% right now. If at this point, Joel, the market somehow comes back and the buy the dippers turn this green, then we're in the most insane buy the dip market of all time.
I'm afraid. And here's the thing to take a look at, and I didn't pull it up yet because of the price action in the S&Ps, but look at the TLT. Right, there's the TLT. There you are, down a buck. You can't even tell on this candle. I mean, this is a number that the market did not want. It's not even that bad. I mean, 0.1%. But you know what? Instead of, you know, be talking about the price action and Aaron, we got to bring in Blue, the former chief economist at the CME. But we've been following the inflation patterns with him for months and months. So. With no further ado, let's bring in Blue. Blue, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine this morning. All good.
Yeah. All good. Did we get a little bit too excited there? I mean, you had the pop. You took out the stops, just like in the pit, right? They knew where the stops were at 74.5. Before the number comes up, they run the stops, they sell it, and then big sell-off here. We got close to, we took out yesterday's low. We're getting a little bounce, but let's hope, calm down and look at this. Instead of, you know, getting all excited at the price action, let's break things down, the inflation picture, making progress, no progress. What do you have for me, Blue?
Well, we've made the progress, but now we're in a congestion area where we're not making any more progress. We only missed the consensus estimates by 0.1, so it's no real big deal, but it's going to cause some issues for the Fed because the Fed has told us they'd like to see the core inflation rate heading toward 2%. And what it's done is it's getting sticky or maybe even stuck around the 3.5. As far as I'm concerned, you know, if inflation was stuck at 3.5, you could still, you know, 5.25, 5.25 Fed funds is still probably a little high, but, the Fed's going to look at this and be a little confused. You know, Jay Powell called the recent, the January, February, March numbers a bumpy ride. Well, maybe it's a little more than a bump. Maybe we're settling in at the three, in the three territory.
Is he going to back off? Powell's going to finally back off these three rate cut things? Is he finally going to open up his mouth and say exactly what's going on? That's my first question. My second question is, and this is why I'm a little bit, why this is a little bit more serious number to me, is because, you know, you never know when all the data is taken, right? You know, let's say it's taken in the first week in March or the second week in March, right? But look what crude's done since then. Even if you took this in mid-March, crude was at, 81, 82. Now you have crude, pressing up against 85, 86. I mean, how about, when they take the numbers, how important is copper's made a move up? I mean, it's a possibility that our April number is going to be worse than this number.
Well, the CPI, the headline CPI might be a little worse, because what you're talking about commodity prices. They're not in the CPI, but gasoline is. And so with crude oil rising, gasoline prices are going to follow. And so energy prices, which have really helped get the headline CPI down, are not going to be helping.
Sorry, Blue, we are knocking on the low from last Thursday here at 91 to 50. So keep an eye on that. I'm sorry about that, Blue. Go ahead.
No, but what we're really saying is, you're right, the headline CPI could creep up because energy is no longer going to be helping. Gasoline will be feeding in at a little higher prices. The Fed looks at core, so it doesn't have food and energy in it. So that will take a little longer to see what happens. And then the other thing that we will have to check in these numbers is where shelter is going, because shelter has been what's holding the numbers up. I mean, higher inflation. And as it comes down a little bit, we'll have some offsetting forces. But I think we're in a congestion zone here where we're really not going to see much progress for quite a few months and maybe longer.
And you did have one of the last Thursday when you had like three different Fed officials come out with pretty hawkish tones. One of them was talking specifically about the housing prices and shelter and how that has to come in. But Blue, you mentioned that at say 3.5% inflation, even though this number came in slightly hot, a tenth of a percent hotter than expected, that 5.5%, future fund rates is a little higher than it needs to be for 3.5%. Can you explain that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people would just look at the fact that inflation hasn't come down to that 2% or isn't falling at the pace it was, say, 6 months to a year ago and say, oh, the rates aren't high enough. You're saying that's not true.
Well, let's just say the PCE core inflation, which that doesn't come out till the end of the month, but that's the one the Fed looks at, and the headlines kind of gives you an idea. Let's just say that gets stuck between 3 and 3.5.
Okay.
Okay. And Fed funds are between 5.25 and 5.5. So that's a pretty big spread. And so there's generally room. Most economists would argue that over the long haul, the Fed funds rate should be at least 1% higher than inflation expectations, which are, by the way, lower than 3.5, or they should be a little higher than the prevailing inflation rate. So that's the 3 to 3.5. So, if you put them 1%, 1.5% higher, you're at 4.5, 4.75. So there's room to cut rates a couple of times. Now, I don't actually think it makes much difference to earnings, to the economy, or to the inflation rate. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think most corporations make their big decisions based on a quarter point move in the Fed funds rate. Investment decisions, that's a rounding error. And consumers are paying credit card fees that are way above this. So they're not, it's not affecting their life either. So I think the Fed and the markets are really overestimating the impact of a couple of rate cuts. Now, it does matter for equities, as we're seeing this morning. But I do think it's an overreaction because it was only 1/10. And we're not going to raise rates.
Basically in line with expectations. Blue, what is driving inflation right now? I mean, you go back to a couple of years ago, it was supply chain issues from COVID. You had this and you had that. I mean, what do you think is keeping the inflation kind of sticky up here at around 3.5%?
The end of globalization. From the early 1990s through the early 2000s, we had a real trend toward globalization. We were getting goods at the cheapest price possible from anywhere around the world. That's over. Supply chains were optimized for the lowest cost. Not anymore. They're optimized for resiliency. And that means they're going to cost a little more. And then we've had some minor disruptions in the supply chains, particularly in shipping, Panama Canal, Suez Canal, Red Sea, things like that. That doesn't add a lot, but it adds a little bit. And so, you know, when we were at 2% inflation for 25 years, those were the globalization period. And now we're backing off that a little bit. We're raising the cost of supply chains. I don't really see us being able to go back to 2%. I think it'll be more like a 3, 3.5. Now, that's a problem for the Fed because their target is 2%. And what I'm saying is they might not hit that target for a long time.
If ever, you made an interesting comment here. We're on the line with Blue Putnam. He is a former chief economist at the CME. You said they're not raising rates. How can you be so sure if this process continues? I mean, I still think they have to let, you know, the rapid increase in rates run the full cycle. But, I mean, you flat out said they're not raising rates. Why? I mean, it's just to be too much of an impact on the economy, or maybe they're going to have to raise rates.
Well, they would raise rates if they really saw inflation rising again. But if it's stuck between around 3.5, 3 in these various metrics, that's not rising. Now, you go back, Aaron was talking about, you go back to what caused the surge in inflation. Okay, we had a pandemic, we didn't travel, we didn't go out to eat, and we got paid $5 trillion by the federal government to spend money, which we did on goods. And so that caused the supply chain. And then the Fed kept interest rates at zero and ate up the $5 trillion with QE. So all those three things are gone. Interest rates are up. They're not doing QE. The government spending is back to pre-pandemic growth patterns. And the supply chains are largely fixed. They're fragile, but they're not the big issue. So the things that caused inflation, the surge in inflation, are all gone. And I don't see any new things happening that could cause a surge. Now, certainly oil prices higher will raise the CPI through gasoline for a couple of months. But, you know, that's not the same as raising all prices or some persistent factor. So I don't see the case for raising rates because I don't see the case for inflation heading back to 4 or 5%. If that happened, a data-dependent Fed would certainly raise rates, and I would be a data-dependent Blue would change his mind.
All right, let's. You gave us some great slides here. I think did you already cover this first one here regarding it? But I just wanted to rip.
Well, let me. The one on the right is the consumer price, the headline CPI versus the PCE core. And as you can see, the headline number is more volatile, but it tells the same story. So that's what we learned. I mean, that's why we all watch the CPI, because it comes out 2 weeks before the PCE. So that's all that's really saying there.
Okay. All right. Move on to the next slide here. I should be able to move on to it. Okay. All right. What are we looking at in this?
Well, what are you looking now? You're looking at some of the components. Some people call these drivers. I don't. These are not drivers. They're reflections of what's happening. And a driver, I think, is like if the government spent a lot of money or the Fed changed rates, things like that. But service inflation has been the issue. Non-durable goods are below 2% inflation. Durable goods are in negative territory. Now, they're going to come back up a little bit. But it's really services that we have to watch. And the services one we'll talk about in a minute is shelter. What you've been talking about, though, on energy is we are seeing gas at the pump rise. And that is in the CPI. So that's going to show up, but it will not show up immediately in the core. The core is X food and energy. But if gas prices are higher, it's going to take more to transport goods. Everything's going to, you know, the core is going to be affected, but with a lag, which is why these telling you more or less the same.
what does, I mean, we mentioned the shelter prices, the housing prices being, you know, part of the reason inflation is so sticky. How do you bring that down other than higher, you know, interest rates, which lead to higher mortgage rates?
Well, here's the thing. Shelter is already coming down. It's coming down rapidly. It is totally mismeasured in the CP, in the inflation metrics. Okay. And the problem is something we've talked about it before, but it's called owner equivalent rent. 25% of the CPI is this fictional, created fiction number that doesn't exist. They survey a whole bunch of people, like 60,000 people. And if you have wanted to rent your home to yourself, what would you charge yourself this month? Well, give me a break. You know, I don't know what I'd charge
myself. Why do they do that, Blue?
They've been doing that since the 80s. It's not like a new thing. They're trying to put the cost of home ownership in here some way, but they don't get it right. And I would say they're probably going to change it in about 2 years. They don't want to change it now because they don't want to get criticized for it. Right. But if you take it out, we are at 2% on the CPI for the last 7 months. Now, I haven't seen this calculation today. Maybe it went up to 2.1.
Want to take the opposite side of this.
Okay, go for it.
Let's take out shelter. I mean, this is the number one expense for human beings is shelter. So if we take out shelter, what covers that? How you want to put housing in there? Because the reason they put this in there is because housing is not in there.
He's not saying take out shelter. He's saying take out the owner equivalent rent the way they factor shelter.
But that is the shelter.
In the CPI, owner equivalent rent is about 25%, and the actual rent, if you had an apartment or rented something like that, is 7 or 8%. So the shelter component gets up to almost about a third of the CPI, which is your point, Dennis. It's expensive. It's what we spend a lot of money on. The question here is not should we really take it out, but should we take it out if it's totally mismeasured? And if they were just looking at the rent component, the one they actually know that, you know, rents, those are coming down. That's not the issue. It's the owner equivalent one that's the problem. So I just want to take out the bad number and take a look at it. But, you know, what it tells you is that we're, you know, inflation's come down a good deal. Whether it's 2% or 3% isn't all that critical to me, but it is to the Fed because they're targeting too.
Yeah, so all I was arguing is that it's such a huge expense. I mean, we have to have something that captures shelter, and this is the way they capture shelter. Because if they put housing in here, let's just say they threw in housing, you know, what would inflation have been for the last decade? It would have been a hell of a lot higher than it was reported.
Like, yeah, but housing is an asset, so that really isn't fair. What I would prefer is that they just expanded the rent component and say, look, if you didn't rent your house to yourself, you would have to rent something like an apartment. And by the way, those costs are going down. So, but I agree with you. It's got to be in there. They just got to do a better job with it. And I will tell you that the professionals that do this know this, but the politicians are not and the Fed is not in any interest in changing this number while it's so controversial.
Yeah, if they do that now, they're just going to say, oh, look how fake the government's telling you there's no inflation when this and that. But I mean, I agree where it seems ridiculous that with how many rents are signed across the country every single day, every single month, there seems like there'd be a good way to collect that data and report it that way, as opposed to going to people's houses and asking, what would you pay for rent? You know, like you said, Blue, that's fictional. That's just made up. Someone's just making up a number and they're surveying it versus what people are actually paying, what they actually do. And I just signed a new lease and I'm actually paying less than I did a year and a half ago. So I understand what you're saying about that, you know, that there could be a better way to calculate this.
Yeah, and they do a great job with the actual rents. And they use some of that information to calibrate the owner equivalent rent. It's just a messy calculation.
Blue, I love this next graphic that you have up here, because when you look at commodities, they show you the open interest and everything, and here you are. This was the July crude oil call options by strike price. The July's expire on June 14th there. What are we looking at here?
Well, that chart on the right tells you what parts of the oil market are in play. in terms of how the options traders are treating it. And it's a very interesting picture. First thing you note is the options traders love round numbers. So if you're going to trade options, you want to go where the liquidity is, and it's in the round numbers. The second thing they do is that there's that way outlier. If you're looking for $100 oil, then what you're saying is the U.S. economy is going to keep rolling right along, and the Chinese economy is going to get better. Both of those things appear to be happening. So that's why we've been moving up on the oil price, plus OPEC has been constraining production. So you got these three things going on. there's a way out there. There's a lot of open interest sitting at $147.50, $150 options. Those people are worried about the Middle East. They're worried about the war expanding and eventually hitting oil supplies. So that is a totally different risk. Now, every option, every call option that's bought, somebody sold it to you. So for every person that's thinking prices might go higher or worried about it, there's somebody on the other side of that position. So this is absolutely not a forecast. It just tells you where the debate is. And the debate is all on the upside right now.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up here, you know, with the inflation progress so far. What are we looking at for the next month? PCE inflation, is that, you know, now do we just got to sit on hands until the PCE and see how things flow through? Wrap us up here with this final graph, Blue.
Well, the CPI is an indicator of the PCE, so it's a slightly different measure. The weights are a little different, but if we were a tenth higher on the headline, we might be a half a tenth, but then they round that up to a tenth on the PCE. And then as you look further out, you're going to start to see gasoline prices creep in. So the headline goes up, but the core keeps is stable. And so there's not going to be any news that changes the Fed's view. The only reason a lot of us think the Fed's going to cut rates is Jay Powell told us he wanted to cut rates. You know, otherwise, we'd be hanging in there right where they are.
All right, Blue. Just overall reaction, you know, you've seen the reaction of the market here. Overreaction, underreaction, sit tight, economy collapsing, Fed that doesn't know what they're doing. Where do you stand?
Don't take any investment advice from me, that's for sure. But it looks like an overreaction. I think as we parse these numbers over the next day or two, we'll realize that, okay, the Fed might only cut once, it might not cut at all, but hey, the economy's fine. And inflation's not that high, and it's come way off the peak. So as an equity trader, I think you got to really focus more on the earnings, and the earnings are going to be good. So, reacting to a CPI number that doesn't say anything about earnings doesn't work for me.
All right. My boy, Blue Putnam, former chief economist at the CME, joining us here on Pre-Market Prep, breaking down the inflation picture. Blue, a pleasure as always. You know when I'll be sending you an email again when we get that data next month. Thanks, Blue. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Triple D, fast and furious trading action. The head fake up, and then they slammed it.
I just tried to hit bids for the last 20 minutes. All I was doing was hitting bids, take off a little spy, hitting bids, take off a little spy. I don't even have any idea how many trades I just made in the last 15 minutes.
A lot of trades.
Trading every like few seconds for the last 20 minutes straight. And it was all bid hitting. I mean, you know, like this is why it's hard to take positions. You know, and I'm hedged back up here now and I'm sitting pretty, you know. I think I made a little bit of money on this. It's hard to like take directional bets on stock charts or something ahead of something like this. Because we've been saying coming in this is the only thing that's gonna matter. You want to see, this is the first day that I have actually seen this. My entire screen, every single stock that I track, other than ExxonMobil, the only one, is red. And I'm talking banks, tech, drugs, staples, utilities, IWM, every single stock. I've got 250 stocks sitting up there. They're all red. And ExxonMobil just ticked back green, just a tick. And it's probably going to go red here again too, because it's actually offered. So, I mean, when is the last time we saw that? When is the last time we saw them sell everything? They're always buying something
else. Thursday, like, last Thursday?
I don't remember like that.
Not in the pre-market.
Like, does somebody have the S&P 500 up there right now? I don't have that with the components. Is there anything? What's green in the S&P 500?
Delta doesn't count, right?
Delta doesn't count because it had earnings. So it's not going to go red.
Well, I'll tell you what's not too red. That's Apple. And I did say that to Joel yesterday, too. I said, I think Apple could be a flight to safety because it's not as interest rate sensitive. It's only down about 0.4%. Not going to help my trade, but I was right on that, Joel. So I got to take some credit from the trade.
You could have made money on that.
I'm not going to make money off of it.
Relatively less than the S&P.
I'm not going to make money off of it. So I got to get something out of it. So I'm going to take my credit here. Let's see. I mean, we can stick on what's moving right now. I mean, obviously, the more interest rate sensitive industries, whether you're looking at regional banks, whether you're looking at solar stocks, those are getting hit. Semiconductors, those are all going to be more interest rate sensitive. So those are all getting more hammered than the overall market. Your companies like Apple that are less interest rate sensitive aren't getting hammered as bad. But again, like I'm out there today. I'm going to be anticipating some form of buy the dip because that's been what's working, and it's going to be, you know, until it proves me that's not working, which maybe today, of course, will be the day that it doesn't work when I go.
Very
and try
important
to play
day.
That.
Very important day. Yeah. The way, like Thursday, you could have gotten all bearish last Thursday and got plowed on Friday, Monday, and Tuesday, you know?
And to your point, Joel, where are we right now?
We're off the lows on the Qs and the S&P.
You just said it. We're at Thursday's low.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly Thursday's low on the SPY right now. We're exactly at Thursday's low. So if it's going to make a stand, if the bulls are going to make a stand, it's going to be right here. And we just sold off 78.5 straight handles. Is it going to be a little bit of a relief pop, you know, in there? Probably. Nothing goes straight down. Yep. But give a perspective. This has been one of the best starts for the S&P that we have seen in years. And it started non-December. It started in October. What are we up? 30% on the S&P? A good year in the markets is 8 or 9 or 10%. That's an average year. Good year is 10, 12, 14%. Up 30% in 6 months. This is why a little bit of profit taking probably was prudent. We talked about this number. I said this number was making me nervous. I was worried it was going to be hot. The bond traders who, you know, always seem to be right in the long run, they thought it was going to be hot. TLT was going down way before this, and they're tracking it. I mean, they're smarter traders. They're figuring it out and they're tracking it. When the TLT is continuing to leak, but the S&Ps are making new highs, it's a warning sign. Warning Will Robinson. Maybe lighten up. Maybe take some profits. Did I sell all my stocks, my long-term portfolio? No. Is this the end of the world? No. But was the market overbought coming into this print? Sure was. Is the market, you know, going to reprice a little bit for the risk that, hey, we may not get 3 interest rate cuts this year? Maybe. Is this number, you know, really, you know, super hot and just gonna, you know, like the end of the world here? No, what'd you say? It was a tick hot. But this just goes to show you this market is really interest rate sensitive, and the Fed to have any ammunition to say we don't have to lower rates this year. So that's where we're at. The market has priced in, you know, the fact that and do we have the Fed tools that update yet, AB?
Yeah,
I'd be curious to see.
Check that out.
You know, they were talking June, July. Is that percentage
it's gotta be
going
September
down
now?
You got to think it's moving down. TLT says it should be moving down.
We've been saying, well, they started out at 6 cuts, and we're like, are you crazy? And then they were going down to 3, and now they're down. I mean, maybe pushing.
They're still kicking at 3, but after a number like today, are they at 2 now? Maybe 1.
Someone said the rally yesterday because Bostic was on Yahoo Finance when we came off the low.
I saw it.
Talking about 3 cuts. I mean, come on, give me a break. But I know we're coming up against.
Well, that's
the clock
what Blue
here.
Was saying too. Blue was saying 4.5%. If we're at 5.25 right now, then that would be 3 quarter rate cuts. So he said Blue said that would be the. That would be the max.
The
thing's not loading, so maybe it's getting overblown with people coming in right now trying to see the CME watch tool. But yeah, based on the bond market, it would seem like the it's less likely now that we do get those cuts.
The other thing that Blue said, you know, just to, you know, even, you know, just take all the information, what we have here, you know, we're coming into earnings season, right? We're coming into our Q1 earnings season. And, you know, that is, you know, the most important determinant of, I mean, obviously interest rates have been having a big impact on this market, but, you know, what would really, you know, stick a fork in this in this market, if, you know, one of the big boys misses, people come in, miss, or they beat, but, you know, give lower guidance. So maybe the Fed cuts will start, you know, the rate increases will start hitting companies, and that will be reflected. That would be reflected in the upcoming earnings. So we got through the number with PPI tomorrow. That won't be as a big of information, but
one thing, again, the show is so S&P centric here. The real story here is not SPY. The real story is IWM. It's down 2.8%. Absolutely hammered, because we were talking about the solar stocks, you know, are down 4.44%. What did I say yesterday? The stocks that are going to hit the hardest is the solar stocks. ENPH down 5.31%. SEDG down 5.69%. If we got a hot number, you knew it was going to be IWM too, that takes it on the chin. I mean, down way more than the overall market here. We have support down at 200, but, you know, we say we're at Thursday's low on the S&P. Forget about Thursday's low on the IWM. We are now approaching the monthly low on the IWM. And as much as it looked like the breakout was happening 7 or 8 days ago for all the small cap stocks, that breakout has now officially been, it is now officially a fake out, because we are down significantly from where we just were. So you can clearly see separations here. So don't be surprised if stocks like NVIDIA actually are the ones that get bought, because people will be like, I'm selling all my NVIDIA today because this number is hot. NVIDIA works if we don't get any interest rate cuts. And that's why I think a stock like NVIDIA is the kind of stock I would be actually buying today, and maybe staying away from all those interest rate sensitive names.
Oh, wow. Great point. I know. I get S&P centric on you. Look at this IWM and look at this $200 area. You did breach it significantly in the pre-market, going to 199.36. You're just quietly above it now, but that has been your area since the end of February. So opening in support, it's a big move. It's been in the trading range. So just as important as, you know, I mentioned the low in the S&P, this $200 level, we close well below, significantly below 200 here in the, this is already a huge move for it, but keep an eye on that for the IWM.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Aaron? I was going to say my CME watch tool is still not loading, but the chat's helping me out here, saying the market is now saying 2 rate cuts, first one in September. That is now the expectation. So probably
September 50 now.
Yeah, it's probably 50 basis points.
March, that's been the trend. Do you sense a pattern forming, folks? Do we sense a pattern forming?
Higher inflation.
TLT is your tell, folks. You can't be buying all these interest rate sensitive stuff until the TLT starts to turn around, and that just does not appear to be happening here this morning. I mean, maybe it turns around and they buy it on a hot number, but I the writing's on the wall. We feel it. Like, I mean, that's the whole thing. With this CPI print, you could kind of feel it. You know, like, you're going out there, obviously TLT was down, but even in the real world, you're seeing inflation still out there. I know we can say inflation is beaten and Blue can say it's beaten, but it doesn't feel like it's beaten. It doesn't feel like it's beaten to the consumer. It doesn't feel like I'm, you know, all of a sudden, you know, my paycheck's going, you know, going to go start going further than it did. It's not the case. I feel like prices are going up, and I feel like they're going up more than 3%. You know, we're 3.8% on the core. It feels way more than that out there. So I don't know if you guys are feeling it, but I'm feeling it.
I think that's what's frustrating, is because even while we started hearing about inflation coming down from those 40-year highs from 10%, it's not like prices were ever actually going down. It's just that they stopped going up. So it's always going to, you know, like I was talking about when I went to Costco the other day, I had like a few things that felt like not that much. And I went to check out, it was $350. I was like, how the hell was this much money? And that's how these numbers are calculated. I'm not saying it's right that it's calculated this way, but they don't need to come down for inflation to come down. They just need to stop going up. So Dennis, I mean, as long as a McDouble is $330 as long as it's not going up to $4. And we're still looking at $3.30 McDouble.
But it's going there. Yeah, my Burger King sign in the local town last year was Whoppers, 2 for $8. Then it was 2 for $9. I'm not joking. I am not joking, AB. 1 year ago, it was 2 for $8. Then it was 2 for $9. Then it was 2 for $10. Then it was 2 for $11. Now it's 2 for $11. So that's literally what 8 to 11. You know, they're telling me in this whole period of the last 6 months, my Burger King prices should only be up, you know, 1.5% if it's 3.8% annualized. Burger King's not following that, I'll tell you that much. Even this is how inflation is still here. That the superstore, which just rips you off on everything in Canada because it's like the main grocery store here, Loblaws owns like everything. It used to be 10,000 points to redeem 10 bucks. You know what they raised it up to? 10,600 points. They inflated the point redemption even. To get the 10 bucks, you got to go 10,600 points, and yet it costs you way more. It used to be if you spent $200, they'd give you some points or extra bonus points. Now it's $300. Everything is just inflated. So it's a bunch of BS. Honestly, I'm going to say it today here. It's a bunch of BS that we are only going up 3.5% a year. The CPI is clueless in this. He's shaking his head at me. But it's complete. The CPI is completely just not real. It's fake.
But
it's
what about
fake news?
But what about when you had like actual commodity prices and input costs for companies, and you could see that start to come down? Like, you know, Blue, we were talking about the supply chain issues from COVID, and if you see the input costs start to come down, and then the companies themselves keep the prices where they're at, or even continue to raise them when the stuff they're buying, you know, like the input costs for Costco is getting cheaper or has leveled out, but they keep increasing prices. I mean, that seems like BS too. So maybe some, you know, fixing that
price gouging. And you know what? Why would they? If the consumer is willing to pay it, why would they lower prices? We'll just increase our margins. I mean, this is capitalism. This is what we've signed up for. It's a different, you know, it's just the way it is. So they've always been done that. But I mean, COVID was an excuse through the whole thing
right,
to just jack prices everywhere. You know, well, I can't help it. It's COVID. Even if your input costs weren't going up, it was a way to price gouge your consumer because you could just BS them and say, well, I can't control the prices coming in. Well, you can't, but maybe they didn't go up as much as you said they did. You know, to your point of Costco, I'm sure the margins are probably getting better. Maybe we should just be owning stocks because they're all going to continue to inflate too. But to say inflation is beaten here, I don't even think we're close to beating inflation. That's my own opinion.
Yeah, the numbers suddenly didn't indicate it. Dennis, when you go down by them at Burger King today, it's going to be buy one for $12 and get one free. And then, you know,
so that's
you,
it.
That's
oh, yeah, but I got something for free. And then the CPI will capture that free burger and they're somehow bring that CPI number down, even though they ging everywhere else. And that doesn't even consider shrinkflation. I mean, we know the CPI doesn't. They say they calculate shrinkflation in there, but we read it on this show multiple times that they calculated shrinkflation to be 1% every 100 years, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. So that's right from the Labor Bureau statistics. They think shrinkflation is 1% every 100 years. Nope. What the hell are you talking about? It's 1% every few weeks, it feels like. So, I mean, who's ever calculating that is obviously doing a very poor job of it or just flat out lying. And I think it's a combination of both. So bottom line is inflation is far from beaten. Bottom line is even these BS numbers are starting to tick higher because we're seeing it out there. And I mean, tangible gas is the worst thing. You know, you go there, the pumps, when oil prices are going up, it's almost like this inverse correlation. You can just see it eventually happening. XLE, USO, whatever you want to use is going up, 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 up. Last month and a half, well, the S&P rally has stalled out, and the IWM rally is now officially gone and starting to try to go back and resume its downtrend here. Not saying we got to just sell all the stocks. I'm not making a market call here because buy the dip, to your point, AB, continues to reemerge, and you know all we really have is these BS numbers. But to come on here and say inflation's beaten, I just don't think it is. So I take the opposite opinion.
Yep. Okay. All right. We are way, way, way over time here.
Joel, who do we got coming on tomorrow?
It's going to interrupt, man. The timing, I'm just incredible with the scheduling. We're going to get Chaykin in here tomorrow. And he had talked about, you know, a little bit of a pullback coming, a little bit of a buy the dip. So we'll see if he has his buy shoes on here and what happens in the price action. That's it. We'll keep an eye on the markets for you guys today. As we speak right now, and I'll talk both IWM and the S&P. IWM absolutely has to close above 200 today. That was the areas of these lows. And the S&P's, because it's been, you know, a little bit stronger and everything, I'm not having as high as expectations. But if we could get above close above Thursday's close, you know, where all the panic was, call that 5,200, then that would be a minor win for the bulls. So that was fun. Let's get on with our day, and we'll be back with you guys tomorrow morning. Great job, Dennis. Great job, Aaron. And thanks to Blue Pond, though.
Yes, sir. We'll see you guys tomorrow morning. And we got live trading starting up right after this.